Welcome to the Nouvelle Art Podcast, and I'm Sean, Duvet Sean, your host. Today I do have a special person. I can't say I've hunted him for a while, but the name has always popped up on my radar from the different circles, and I've been following the journey for quite a long time. Jesse Mwanje, welcome.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you for inviting me to the Nouvelle Art Podcast. Glad to be here.
How are you doing?
I'm good, I'm good. Saturday, the day to relax. So yeah, trying to do that exactly.
Yeah, sure. And I happen to get you on my schedule when you're supposed to relax.
It's a dream.
Well, probably you are trying to get that rest, having put out the album, which we'll talk about later on.
Yeah. On the
so to those who do not know Jesse, who is Jesse Mwanje?
Man, I'm just a creative. I'm just a musician, music producer, visual artist. And that's the best way I can describe myself. Of course, when you look at those different facets of my life, that's when you can begin to break down exactly what I'm interested in, or what my principles are, or what my outlook on life is. But that is what you really start with. I'm a creative.
Nice. There are two songs in your discography that I feel personally they give an idea of who you are without you actually saying so. And I think one of the songs is one of them is an intro, okay? One is an intro to your new album, Afrosphere, I'm getting it right.
Yep.
One of the intro to that project, and then there is a song on your EP, the Chidandali EP. And I think the title track where you say they want me to sing this and that, I feel that describe who you are. You don't want, you're a creative who does not want to be boxed. What can you say?
Well, what I can say about that is I believe there are no limits. When you begin creating limits or boundaries within which to create, you stop to discover. And I'm also an artist, and I've studied great artists, people like Da Vinci or Michelangelo, and I teach about them as well. And when you see what their curiosity was able to help them achieve, and this was probably in the 16th or 17th century, you know, you start to realize that you need to be a person that is willing to discover new things over time. In your domain, whether you're a musician or not, you need to be the person who's curious enough to push the boundaries and always be on the edge. So when you exist in a society or environment that is trying to curtail that all the time, it becomes frustrating. So that's what Chidandali comes about. And that's how new genres were born. New genres are born always at the edge of discovery, you know. They're never born within the confines of what people considered safe or mainstream or what we should do. Of course, you don't ignore the zeitgeist, ideally the popular things or popular elements, the music, but at the edge, at the borders of it, that is where new genres always came about. So I'm thinking, are you telling me you have stopped discovering? Of course, there's nothing new under the sun, but you always get from things that already existed. But the question would be, can't we ever create something new? Can't we? Interestingly, yesterday night, I was supposed to have a radio interview, Next Radio. Fortunately, we had the president speaking, so we postponed it. And I remember the top countdown had songs from Uganda from, I think, around 2009, 10, you know? And for some reason, we kept on saying this was like almost the golden age of urban music, because that's the time when Swans Avenue was really, really in heavy rotation with also a producer like Just Jose. and all these songs, even Rubber Dubber at that time, very, very serious lyricist. They're like, how come we don't have that now? And how come we didn't evolve from that and actually get better? For some reason, there was some regression in music. So it makes you realize that it has to be the artists who are intentionally go out and be like, okay, this is what everyone is creating. I'm going to create this because it's important that we're always at the edge of it. And when we're looking back and looking at 2009, 2010, and that's when Swang's Avenue, the songs like Mr. DJ were out in 2008, 2009. Navi was really popping at that point. And like, the music was very interesting then. Hip hop in particular as well was very interesting then. But you look now and you're like, wait a minute, something isn't adding up. And you notice it is not a given that music will develop or become better. A time can come when people will be like, you know, this is what we're creating and we're going to stay in this confines. So it has to be the artists who intentionally go out of their way not to align or to conform, but to experiment, to collaborate, you know. In those spaces is where you're going to find something new. That's where something new will be born. And that is why I created Chidandali, and that's really my mindset in general. The journey. Okay, so the journey I began making music. The journey really started in church. I would say church. Watoto, I remember joining a certain group called City Lights, probably in S2. I was trained there. I remember we used to do vocal lessons, dance lessons as well. Church is really a place for many musicians, Ugandan and abroad. Many of us are bred in church. And so eventually I also joined another band called Wellsprings, that's All Saints, which is just on top of the hill next to Watoto. And for me, I really created good friendships there and good bonds. And eventually I learned to play guitar in Essex Park. And by that time I was still in the band. Then at campus, that's when I began to dabble a bit in music production, but not so much music production, to just creating the melodies here and there. Then I went to studio when I was in second year. That's when I released my first song. I was in 2012, I think. Yeah, 2012. So I released my first song. I was on radio at that point. Then I began to collaborate a lot. I think the people who brought me to the fold mainly were hip-hop musicians. Yeah, because Ryonga was like the first person I collaborated with. But even before I released that music, I remember I was a backup singer for Maurice's Kriya's concert, his real first concert. But when it came to mainstream music or radio music, it was really hip hop musicians that brought me to the fold. The younger, the Myth. Who else? Yeah, younger Myth. I also did some work with GNL. Trying to remember the other rapper that I collaborated with, Enigma. Yeah. So those are like the main people that really brought me to the fold, because they're already popular at that point. Yeah, and ever since then, Jesse Miojo has been a musician, releasing music, collaborating. Yeah.
Oh, great. So you do have three full-length projects out. That is Chidandali and the new project, Afrosphere, and a project that you...
If we try. There are actually four, because I released one last year as well. But the three, it was a conceptual, it was a conscious album, a conscious EP rather, of three songs. But I released an EP separately.
Maybe briefly, what can you say about those two projects before we dive into the first one? Because that's what we shall end with. Just briefly, because all these projects say something about what you are at, the level you are at.
Okay, so the first one was If We Try. And If We Try was really more a project that was concentrating and highlighting my ability as a singer and songwriter and also guitarist, because those were like my principal skills at that time. The things that you say, JC, and you perform on spot, that's what I could do. And obviously it is also not a single, it's not a single themed song. I mean a single themed album, because I don't like to create single themes that are that long. You can break them down in many ways if you want, but I feel that I need to talk about different things, because yeah, I'm more respected speaking about different things at the same time as well. So If We Try was really more of something that was highlighting me as a singer songwriter. Then Chidandali was like my real first project as a producer. Yeah, but it was a solo project in a sense. I only collaborated with two musicians on that one, but it was more of my first project as a producer, and I was experimenting, getting better. And yeah, again, it's also different aspects in life that I was highlighting.
Now that you've said you've actually been, you know, trying to do the production as well, and then the artist, singer, somewhere you do some bars there, you rap, sing somewhere there, and I would like to just commend the work on the Chidandali title track, because I noticed it's multi-genre. From point to another, you move from, and the time when I was listening to it and I noticed, oh, that is trap. Like, okay, how did we get there? So I have I play back songs so that I track down every single, I think, instrument and sound. I noticed you telling me, okay, you are against Chidandali, but low key, this is some hybrid Chidandali. I don't know if that was the intention.
No, definitely. Actually, the reason why I met Chidandali, as in, if you go and Google Chidandali and see what Wikipedia brings, Chidandali will be described differently from what we understand Chidandali as. And Chidandali is really seen as in a negative view here. But I wanted to get the positive things in Chidandali and address the culture that people have, the mindset that people have. So I got the positive things, the positive elements of Chidandali, because Chidandali is really, if you want you to Google it, you'll find out what Wikipedia says about Chidandali, the different genres that make Chidandali. Chidandali is not bad inherently when you look at the music that inspired it, but the things that Ugandans when you make a cast and you pour wax in it, and you get that mold that you get stuck in, the ones that Ugandans have let themselves get stuck in, it's just disappointing, especially producers and musicians. Yeah, because it's at the forefront, we're not seeing people who are doing exciting, creative things. When you look at Nigeria, that is happening, because there's mad, serious competition in Nigeria in the music industry. And every 2 years, there is an interesting crop of musicians that comes up because of their competition and their willingness to be at the edge of it. It's impossible to find, it's hard to find that in Yuji. Okay, it's possible you can find it, but it's really not at the mainstream level. It's more of the niche musicians, more of the indie artists that are doing that, or contemporary artists that are doing that, but the ones that have the huge platform aren't doing that, you know? And so that's what I did with Chidandali. I got facets or elements that I like about the music, and I was addressing the mindset, the negative mindset. So it was like two things at the same time. Like, yeah, that's what I was doing with that particular song. And if you listen to the rest of the songs as well, I also get elements of Chidandale that I like, and I use them to produce music that I like by using Chidandale elements.
I feel like you were trying to say, okay, this could be the sound of Chidandale music. I feel like that is what you were trying to say, but you missed the point by looking at the negative part of what the vision around Chidandale. I feel like that is what you were saying.
Yeah, definitely. When it comes to the sonics, I felt Ugandan could do better. That was the whole point of the project. I know many people were only looking at what I was addressing, but of course anyone who listens to music, and they're not only listening to lyrics, because music, you're consuming it really wholesomely. You're going to enjoy the music. Like, oh, I like what you're saying, but I like the music as well. I know I agree with what you're saying, but I like the sound that you've created it with. And that is really the point at the end of the day. And music production is so important. I feel like, because music producers really do influence the soundscape, they change the paradigm. Like the time when Washington was producing for Radio and Weasel, yeah, and he had the music industry, or I should say the sound, in his palms. And I think it's important for music producers to realize how much power they may have. You know, right now we're seeing Daddy Andre, the person who is doing that, especially producer artists. You know, at one point, just Jose when he was with Songs Avenue. So you influence a whole generation, or you can shift the paradigms just by being a music producer. And that's the thing that I'm really diving into more.
Right. Okay, speaking of producers, whose sound do you feel, this sound appeals to me?
In Uganda or generally?
Let's start with Uganda.
Uganda. It's a good question. Very good question. In Uganda, I'm going to start with a guy called Sam Bisasso. Sam Bisasso is so much of a live musician, though. Sam Bisasso produced Maurice Kriya's first album. He was part of the producers, even with the second one, I think. He's a bass guitarist. I like it when music producers are instrumentalists as well, because understanding music theory is important. You can expand your world by just understanding music theory. So Sam Bisasso, then there's also Cass Kasozi. Cass Kasozi has produced for Sandra Nakoma, Kadugala album, which was like, it won an AFRIMA award. It was a very, very good album. The sonics were amazing. If you play that album in a car, man, it just sounds so good. The instruments, the clarity. So Sam Bisasso, Cass Kasozi. Now, when it comes to hip hop producers, I would say Ethan. Yeah, Ethan is a very good producer. I like his selection. I like his selection of instruments. Yeah. I like the song he did with Taka HD and Keiko, Mudala. I think it's a very, very good song. Trying to find another producer. Nelson Muhire is also one of the people that trained me. The guy that is behind Collective UG. The guy that did Amen. Then Abasa. Abasa is a close friend of mine, and actually my longest collaborator. I like his melodies. I like his vocal production. I work with him closely. I work with him on every project that I've worked on. So for me, those are serious producers. They're not joking around. And yeah, that is it.
Nice. All the names you've mentioned, I'm excited. I've seen Abasa work. I haven't seen Mohiri. Listen to their producer. I think they're amazing producers, and their sound band is though I expected to say maybe Baru. I don't know.
Oh yeah, Baru definitely. Baru is also very specialized, but he's expanding his world recently because I've been in studio with him and worked on certain projects with him. So yes, Baru also, yeah, definitely Baru, because, and Baru also is definitely a close collaborator of Avasa. And what I like about Baru is his consistency. I was trying to look for names, the names were skipping out of my mind, yeah, but Baru definitely, because he's also very consistent, he's very hardworking, and he's focused. And I like that, outside even just the studio. So yes, Baru, definitely. Because he actually mastered my last project.
And you, I think you were about to tell us about the producers out of Uganda that appeal to you, then we can move to the next thing.
Oh yeah, I love hip hop producers, but I'm going to mention mainly R&B, pop, then hip hop. So R&B, I like back in the day, Dark Child, very amazing producer. I also like before him, obviously, Babyface, because Babyface was just everything, from writer, producer, singer, amazing. Well, Dark Child, Babyface, Dark Child, JD, these are older producers. Then we come closer to people like Soundwave. Soundwave is an amazing producer, Kendrick Lamar, and Top Dog Entertainment. I'm trying to find another R&B producer, but I think even Music Soul Child is a producer. Yes, so is so I keep on mentioning producer artists. Obviously, Pharrell. Else? Yeah, Timbaland, man. Yes, definitely. Timbaland, Pharrell. Then it comes to pop music, because there are many, man. I can mention forever. Let me shift on. When it comes to pop, I like Max Martin. Max Martin is a beast. He's like, is another level, really. Max Martin. Then how can I forget Quincy Jones? Quincy Jones, I think, for me, tops it up all. Yeah, for all of them, Quincy Jones is like the epitome. And obviously Dr. Dre, but Quincy Jones tops it up for me.
I think for rap's sake, some people True. Say Dre is actually a student of Quincy.
Yeah, I've had the conversation. Dr. Dre has said that himself as well.
It's like, how is it being behind the board and then being the artist in front of the people? How is it like? What's the feeling?
I think the production is really like my latest thing as an artist. People have not, are now starting to experience this. They're opening their minds up to me being a producer, so the reactions are still new. Because when I released Chidandale, people weren't really talking about my production so much. They like the songs, but I don't think in their minds Jesse had yet made sense that I was a producer. Because they would keep on thinking, oh, you produce a song as well? Like, yeah, I did it. Oh, you even did the vocals as well? Like, yeah, I did that. So it was more of the fact was just settling. Now, on this new album, they're like, oh man, Jesse the sound. So I like that reaction. But well, as a performer, I've been doing that for so long, really. The reactions are the same. You're a performer, it's really not new to me. I've been doing that for a while. Jesse Ngoma, yes.
That's when I'm like, he's actually producing every project ever since Chidandale. What's your reaction? How do you feel like you can get the spotlight being the person creating the sound? Because a producer is actually playing a big role. The contributors to the sound you're trying to influence. And I noticed much as you were sick, I feel like you were still with rappers' heart or mentality. I don't know.
Nah, man, you're right on the spot. It feels good, man. It really does, because for me, it is a mark of evolution. I believe in evolving all the time. You evolve or you die in any part of your life. You either evolve or you die. Like, do it to the end. And again, I'm a student of guys like Da Vinci, who was a universalist, who was an architect, an engineer, a musician, a painter. These Renaissance men didn't believe in limitations. And this is hundreds of years ago. So for me, the ability to show that I've evolved and for people to understand that and to see that really does feel good. Yeah, it really does. And I'm always waiting for the next challenge. Like, okay, I've done this, what's next? I'm already moving on to the next one as well.
So let's jump into the new album.
Yeah, Afrosphere. So the word comes from being Afrocentric and also what was in my atmosphere at that time in terms of what I'm listening to. The world has had an interesting shift. When it comes to Afrobeats, yeah, and Afropop. We have seen them adopt and adapt as well. Adopt it and adapt to it. We've seen how it really properly started with Kanye West. I can't even believe I forgot to mention Kanye West as a producer, because he's like the biggest influence, actually. Yeah, Kanye West. So it really started with Kanye West, and when he collaborated with the Nigerian, what's his name, Don Jazzy, and forgetting the other rapper, Oliver Twist. Yeah, that's when we began seeing a proper shift, you know, of American music starting to pay attention to Afro beats, you know? And man, that was really interesting. That was really, really good, because Kanye West always did it before everyone else, and Drake, of course, followed after that. And when we saw that shift of that song of Oliver Twist and how these guys were brought into the fold, how Don Jazzy came into the fold to produce on Watch the Throne, then you start to see a real shift later on with Jay-Z. Then also saw it with this girl, this lady who was part of 50 Cent's group. I'm forgetting her name, when she collaborated with this guy from Congo. Olivia, when she collaborated with this guy from Congo, I'm forgetting his name, when they did that song that had a Lingala feel to it. Then eventually you start to see that the world is paying attention to Afrocentric. I mean Afrobeats rather. Then I, however, have been influenced a lot by hip pop and R&B. Like you mentioned, I'm a musician with a rapper's heart. I listen to hip hop a lot. I love rap music. I can rap if I want to. If I say, Jesse, let's go rap, I will do that. But I'm like, you know what, I don't want to delve so much into it right now. So I decided to combine the things that influenced me and the things that are currently influencing the zeitgeist, really, of the popular world music. We've seen Justin Bieber just appear on a Wizkid song. Like, you really now start to notice that African music and African production can't be ignored. So I got the elements from Afropop and Afrobeats and combined it with the things that I love from the very get-go, from the start, from the onset, and that is hip-hop and R&B. And that is why you have mainly hip-hop musicians on the album, mainly. And the R&B aspect has me singing, or Lamu. So that is what it really was about. That's how Afrosphere, the name Afrosphere, comes about.
The album is an African atmosphere. I find that, you know, you made it so brief that I still wanted to explore. I don't know if the intention is maybe in the streaming age, which you can talk about, but like I plugged it in and I said, you know what, let me do some listen to the project once the first time when it drops the other weekend. So I didn't bother to look at how how long it is, you know, all those details. Normally, I like to listen to music. I don't even want to see the titles when it's a project. Just want to plug in, then listen to whatever I do. Then, all of a sudden, the project is done, and I'm like, damn. Why is that the same thing Baro does with his series of EPs? I don't know what you say about the length.
I think I was actually, I had like probably two more songs I was going to add to it, but I felt what needed to be said and what would fit properly in the sonics of the album cohesively was enough. And again, generally people have a shorter attention span these days, to be honest. And the importance for them to fully get what you're trying them to listen to, because, you know, I didn't release a single. I release it as a project. I wanted people to listen to it as a project. Yes, eventually I want to push particular songs individually, but I wanted them to understand the importance of listening to a project throughout and getting the picture that you're trying to paint, rather than releasing one single and pushing a 16-track album and having some songs never listened to. So, and it's also good to be with the fan base that way. Give them a dose slowly, eventually is big enough for them to consume, they are ready to sit down and actually listen to it. And that is why I've been releasing shorter albums or short EPs, really. And also the reason was because you want to make sure that you have no monotony, really, at one point. Yes, you can tell one person produced it, the sounds are tied in well together. But you want to make sure you don't lose people. So it's a balance, really, because a time comes. Yeah, so that is why, really, that is why I released a short project. Eventually, I'll release at most a 12-track album, but I don't like really having very lengthy albums. I don't see the point.
Oh, you didn't want to be a Chris Brown and you release 40 songs as an album.
Yeah, and I was just mentioning that. I didn't want to be, and Chris Brown has obviously a strategic reason or point why he did that, because Chris Brown is Chris Brown. All those songs will get him money eventually. But if you're not at that level, what are you? Because the resources that you have to put into making these songs, then it's not free. Yes, I can produce, but I worked with Abasa and Baru, and it wasn't for free, you know, because these are my contemporaries and I respect their craft. I pay them to master, I pay them to mix. Some of the instrumentalists, friends of mine, will come and play. One of them, maybe you pay them because, you know, you don't have that type of connection. So, and you're not going to try and get stuff for free. Yeah, so it's, you have to amass resources. And for me, my resources are my skills. I've amassed skills over time, and I don't have to pay my way through everything. But if you're not doing that, you have to pay your way through everything. So how are you going to release a 12-track album unless you have a trust fund or serious funding, and each song is going to cost you seriously, and you don't even have the resources? That's madness. So you either gather the skills to be able to do these things and complement your creativity and pay where you need to pay, or you go get funding. And this is the thing, being an independent artist, most independent artists are real do-it-yourself types, because you realize that's what being signed does for you. It gives you a budget and gives you an advance to go and create, you know, but you have to pay that back. Not even the same amount of money, you have to pay back in profit. So it is, when you look at the back end of the creative process, that people don't even imagine, like what an artist will go through to release all these songs, you know, it is proper sacrifice.
Yeah, sure. So, given a chance, would you sign a deal?
Given a chance, why not? Depends on the kind of deal, obviously. And the deals come to you, they also want to see what leverage you have. If you have no bargaining power, man, if you can sign a deal, and for example, I'll give an example, J. Cole, for instance. When J. Cole signed his first deal, he didn't sign a very good deal, you know, but he delivered, and he delivered. Every time you deliver, you can always go back to the negotiating table and you renegotiate a better deal. And J. Cole never negotiated any deal until Forest Hill Drive, you know, until he sat down. Was through sidelined story. Then Boncina, he kept on delivering. He was always number one, but he never negotiated his deals until Forest Hill Drive. That's when the deal was renegotiated, and now he had serious bargaining power. So if you're going to say signing a deal is evil, why do artists like J. Cole end up surviving? Because then, okay, it's rare, but they exist. It depends on how much, how you use that money. Now, for instance, if I got a record deal, and obviously I would want to make sure that I can choose the producers I work with, or I can produce for myself, rather than them telling me who you have to work with. Because if they tell you who you have to work with, you have to pay that person. Things like that. So you have to know, I can sign it depending on the agreements that we have, but have a deal on the table, not out of the question. So if they gave me a deal and they're like, okay, we like what you've done, and that is why I want to sign you, meaning you like the sound I've created, meaning I have to produce for myself or I have to choose my production team. But if they're like, oh, you're a good singer, but want to change your production and we're giving you a deal, you know, you start to see what leverage do you have. Yeah, so it depends really on the agreement, but a deal is not off the table. All these artists we're seeing have deals. Even when we look at Swans Avenue, Irene Talley had a deal. This new girl with the Swans Avenue, Azawi, has a deal, you know, but it depends on what they're getting out of it.
And you've said it clearly, depending on what they're getting out of it. I think most people sign deals without understanding them, probably because they are very young, professional. As regards age, sometimes some people are actually too young to control the outcomes of the deal because the advance is exciting. I think the independent route is also important for someone to at least first go solo or independently for a certain period of time to understand the dynamics of every aspect of the game. And probably either you have a deal where you of course should take the majority stake, having, you know, invested in yourself for a long time. I think for me, my advice would be that, you know, be independent. When a deal arises, have a partnership.
You know, that makes sense. It makes sense, either distribution or something else. But independent, people really like to romanticize being independent.
Being indie, I know the feeling. Go on.
And actually, even the word being independent is not even understood in Uganda, because even deals alone are not understood, or having record labels, because the industry is not set up like that. So here in Uganda, people just have sponsors, you know, and those become your, and they, many of them don't even understand how music works or how much you have to wait for to get your investment back, things like that. So being independent in UG, largely we're all independent. We're all independent, even when it comes to people like, someone as huge as who? I don't want to mention names now. The huge artists that we're seeing right now in the mainstream, and they're being pushed. They have no record label. They have these managers here and there. They have booking agents, but they're mainly independent. The question would be, who's funding them? Because money has to be spent regardless. These music videos aren't free. Who's funding them and who are they partnering with? So I think the conversation here, if you look at it from an American context, it's very different from a Ugandan context. And I think when you talk about independent artists, you should bring it down to the Ugandan context, because who's out there signing Ugandan musicians? Well, no one's doing that. So you're going to remain largely independent, whether you like it or not. So that whole conversation of, if you get a deal, will you sign it? Who's giving you the deal? Is it Sony Africa? You know, if they're going to give you a deal, you have to be as huge as Keko, and on top of that, they're going to bury you as well. Anyway. So it's funny, yeah? Like, that conversation of, if you get a deal, you can sign it. You'd have to ask me that conversation because abroad, here, it's a whole different conversation, man. We are independent. We are.
True. I think 98% of the industry is actually independent. 98. Yeah, because I listen to Cindy sometimes. She said she just works with teams. gravity theory controls every aspect of his career, from the financing to the gate to, you know, the events and all that. I think Stephanie probably is the only legitimate, if I should use the word, the only recognized labor as such. There are those that have been there before. Used to have Platinum, Shaggy, Bonner, I think, he revamped into Vine Entertainment Group, something of that nature. So I don't know if it's operating as a fully fledged record label. The reason why I brought this conversation is that when I read the credits below on the EP, I see Lobster right there, you know. And then when I look at the previous work, the copyright were to Sketch Clan, something like that.
Yeah.
I hope you don't say this for me. I've done some sort of police investigation kind of thing, but I have to research.
You have done your investigation. I respect that. So yeah, Sketch Clan is a company that we built, me and a friend of mine, a multimedia company, especially dealing with music and animation. And we bought the equipment that does the music production, and also the equipment is also, and of course, a skill that we have helped with when we have animation projects. Lobster does not have credit to the music. I have the rights to the music because I made it. He's distributing through Orchard, yeah, and takes a percentage as a distributor. But the copyright remains mine. All the music is mine.
Oh,
yeah.
So apparently, he's only distributing, because I've seen him. I've seen the name on other projects. I think from Baru.
Lobster's a cool guy because he really understands also the back end of it, because he's invested his time to understand how these things work as well. He has good contacts either in Nigeria or Kenya. And you want to have that mind around you when it comes to pushing the music as well. So I decided to work with him, especially on this one, and see what is the difference between the previous ones and this one. Of course, you're going to do your comparisons. And obviously, you can't do everything by yourself. No one is smarter than all of us in the room.
True.
And yeah, I'm seeing the good results as well, especially online reactions. But for me, there's still things that I don't buy into easily recently, something like vanity metrics, really. Because at the end of the day, if you want to make your investment back, you have to be on stage performing. And you also want to sell merch, and you have to sell merchandise. And stage is something that I've been doing since I was very young, and that is where I really trust my ability as well. I may be a producer, but performing is not something that I've been a performer longer than I've been a producer. So eventually those numbers have to convert into tickets or people coming to your shows or people buying your merchandise. And that's what's more important for me, because that money goes back into creating. You don't just throw money at something and not expected to pay you back. So for example, in 2019 I held about three shows, and that time I was not pushing a lot of my music online. People knew me, yes, their music was on radio and whatever, but the fact that we never made any loss from the get, did three shows, people came through, and I never put in any amount of money at the start. All the money that we got from the get collection, and able to pay everyone, from the music for the instrumentalists, to me myself, to the photographers. The venue had its own cut. They even took the bar. At the end of the day, it showed me the importance of making sure that you drive your numbers to that. Perform. Yeah, do shows, do events, rather than just staying online. I don't buy into that so much. Yes, I like the streams. Like seeing the numbers, but streams don't pay you that much. 1,000 streams, 1,000 streams really on Spotify are like 50. Like how much? It's $15.
The gospel I've been trying to preach out there is for artists to, okay, the streaming is cool, it helps you tap into maybe a newer audience, but I was thinking, if you sold the music directly on your website, because when you go like on Book Live, I do have a store there. I'm a poet, but I know for those who know me and want to start, I just send the link. I don't have to send them the link. So one purchase is enough for me to garner like 100 streams. Because it's the streaming for a person with a niche kind of audience. It's really a lot of work.
Yes. Thank you very much. Yes.
If you have a platform that you run and own by yourself, you know, you can.
Oh, no, I believe that 100%, and that's something that I want to delve into properly, because you start to notice, wait a minute, the streaming at one point only makes sense when you're really, really, really huge, you know, and you're probably getting like 10,000 streams per song monthly. That's when you can say, yeah, streaming works. So for now, you start to test and see how different spaces work, and then you come back to your drawing board. You're like, okay, it's better this way. I've gathered a huge number of fans, I have a website, and I have a payment platform that people can buy my music directly. Those who want to stream can go stream, but those that really want, if you got 100 people giving you 20,000 shillings, you know, my friend, getting it from streaming, yeah, you have to have way more than 100 people
to get just money. Just to cut you short, I recently actually put out an article on having two fans. You only need 100 people to, you know, to survive. Each of them is giving you 20,000 per month, you know, to purchase the music. Just those 100, about 2 million, at least you can do something out of to survive.
Yeah,
you know, without
you're right.
And then these other platforms, and then we can add on those other platforms and the merchandise. I think it would be a cool thing. Streaming,
yes,
is,
man. You're right. You're very right. Yeah, the streaming is, it's actually the reason why I even shifted from my previous distributor to Lobster, because at least working with Orchard, because Lobster is an Orchard agent, is because the numbers even are better. You know, when you're on the other streaming platforms, you're paying a yearly fee, yes, but it's really all up to you. You know, you don't even have a direct contact. It's like you're talking to a bot, you know, then you realize, wait a minute, they have been played here. You know, you're paying these niggas more than you're getting out of it. So hence the shift to working with Lobster, and I'm seeing the results in a certain sense when it comes to the matrix, the numbers, the music is there. Moving, while previously Chidandali was known, it was so more known on radio airplay, of which they didn't even pay us as well.
Yeah.
So you start to see, you start to really break down when it comes to music business. Yeah. Now that's the difference between creating music and music business, when you start to realize what tangible things am I getting out of the work that I'm putting into this. And I really am a big believer in that, moving towards the direction of having people directly pay to you, because I've had people who have directly bought my music, this previous album, they're calling me and directly buying, you know, and they're sending me money, you know, and it shows that you can build that group of people that are willing to do that. So yes, the next project that we work on is definitely that will be in mind, and every project that comes on after that. I remember this guy, what's his name? Forgotten his name. He released his album as an NFT, Tory Lanez, and he has over 10 million followers. And I think he sold each, no, he didn't sell. You could get that album at like, I think $1. And I think in 2 minutes, is it $1? Because people would buy that music and resell it as NFTs if they wanted, because you own a part of it. He had gone over a gold record amount of sales in 2 minutes, I think, just because he went that route of an NFT. And it shows you, if you build a proper fan base and you consolidate your fan base and you're able to get them to buy your product directly, that is better than relying on the middleman, the streaming app, to get tangible money. You rather put your efforts in that. And for me, that's the direction I want to take. Because again, we're independent, right? So yes, I believe in that.
I like the direction. We can always come back some other time, you know, to discuss, you know, the music. And I like that you are actually following every step of, you know, the trends that can be set. I used to think streaming was everything until, you know, I did a couple of contributions for a number of people. Like, they get numbers, but really when you look at the check, it's not worth it. So so you can't help the middleman. I've seen independent artists abroad doing the same thing. People like Rand Lin, because the industry is holding. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I believe in that. Actually, I'm more excited about the next project, because now this one is slightly harder because you have so many people that you've collaborated with, and they have split sheets and percentages, and because I did all that as well, and people are entitled to their intellectual property, yeah. But now the next one is not going to be so much of a collaborative. If it will be very few musicians, probably 3 or 4 at most. And I would prefer really more of Jesse music. And so I'm going to split the artist and the producer. So here, this is like the project that merged the two so well, or at least has started to do that. Because I want to do more after albums eventually, not only this. But with time, I want to step away from being the person who's singing and be the person who produces more. But I will continue as an artist, as a singer-songwriter. Just the same way we've seen One Republic. Well, the guy, the lead singer of One Republic, is a producer, and he has worked with Timbaland. He has worked with Timbaland to produce R&B and whatever, but you can never tell that because he split those two, the artist and the producer. And when you keep on mixing them all the time, the artist and producer, one of them might suffer. The artist might suffer. So that's why I don't want to overly delve into appearing on projects which are so out of the genre that I am known for as an artist, because really I'm a singer and guitarist. So I want to split those two and continue on that path as a producer, but also the path as a singer, guitarist, which I really love as well. And that is the one that I'm really going to focus so much on, that your super fan concept.
Nice. So actually don't own the super fan concept. I read somewhere the founder of The Wire, he broke it down to 1,000. So I broke it down for my Ugandan people.
200.
It makes quite some good sense. Probably in the future you can hit me up and we can have conversations, you know, of cutting out the middleman.
Oh, no, definitely, man. I like your mindset. I remember one thing that made me really agree to the podcast is I remember you giving out some advice and watching the video on artists and how they should navigate when it comes to emailing particular people. It really shows that you do your research. Yeah, you do your research work, and I appreciate people that do that so much. And I'm definitely going to keep in contact. And yeah, I would like to have that conversation better. I want to see what you've done, how you've done it, and I will move in that direction as well.
I used to think no one pays attention. That is proof. People listen to the podcast, they see everything.
I know.
To you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Any final remarks where people can get the music?
The music is on every platform. As long as you type JC, you'll find it. And yes, this stream. Because yeah, we need to benefit from it as well. And yeah, look out for more music. For me, I feel like I've just started. I really feel like I've just started. I'm re-energized that way. I like challenges, and you're going to see me for a long time. As long as God allows me to exist, I'm going nowhere.
Yeah, sure. And I also encourage people, if you want the album Afrosphere and any other project he has released before, hit him up directly on social media and let the man get the check directly.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Streaming, yes, we can benefit from it, but if you can support directly, no problem.
Yeah.
It does wonders for the artist.
Yes, it does. It does.
Unless there is anything else you would like to say now.
No, not really. That's really it.
It's been a pleasure having you on here, Jesse.
Thank you. Thank you.
That we've had this conversation. Your name has popped up, but I didn't gotten the special time, you know, to have the meeting, but I've been following the journey.
Thank you so much, Sean. I appreciate that. And yeah, this has been a very interesting conversation.
Sure. Looking forward to more of these conversations.
Definitely.
I've been Nuve Sean for the Nuve Live podcast, and we out. See you in the next one. Peace, mind.
Peace.